All right, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So I first want to begin by thanking the sponsors of this series, to thank Leah Soul for sponsoring in memory of her mother, Marguerite Streit, and her brother, Fridolin Wixer. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, their neshamos will have an aliyah. And as well as to thank Eileen Burke for sponsoring in memory of her parents, Sarah Bas Avraham and Yosef Ben Yitzchak Halevi. And we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, their neshamos will have an aliyah. Thank you for your sponsorship. So just a quick review from last week. So we focused last week really on the fundamentals of conversion, with a specific focus on the ingredients necessary to effect proper conversion. So again, a very quick run-through, because again, I have to apologize. Our shiur this morning is going to be a little bit short, and unfortunately, there's a funeral a little bit later on this today. So I apologize, we'll have to condense a little bit, but in Yeretz Hashem, it looks like we're going to have a part three, which, all right, maybe President Reagan, I don't know, the next time we have, we'll figure out when, but I promise I will give you the rest. I won't hold anything back. But we'll have to be a little bit more narrow in our focus today. So last week we focused on the basic ingredients for appropriate conversion. And we explained that in order to affect appropriate conversion, one requires milah, circumcision, obviously, for a man, tevila, immersion in the mikvah, kabbalah, samitzos, acceptance of mitzvah. So the first two are really quite simple, maybe is the wrong word, but straightforward is probably the better term. Meaning milah, circumcision is what it is, tevila and amikvah is what it is. There's not too much controversy surrounding those particular things, except, again, we did discuss the interesting case of the hemophiliac baby and what to do in that particular situation. Major machlokes, aposke, major dispute among the various halachic commentaries or halachic sisters as to whether or not one could go ahead and have an effective conversion without milah. But we really spent the bulk of our time focusing on kabbalas mitzvos, acceptance of mitzvos, and ultimately what that means. So the Talmud explains, you have to give the prospective get, the prospective convert, kalos, some of the easier mitzvos, chamuros, some of the more intense mitzvos. The Rambam added in theology as well. And what we really came out with last week was the interesting approach of Rav Moshe, Rav Chaim Ozer Grzhensky, the Achi Ezra, as well as others, that kabbalas hamitzvos means that a person must conceptually accept everything, even if behaviorally they know from the beginning they're not going to be able to do everything. So the idea of kabbalas hamitzvos is I must accept kol haTorah kula, the entire Torah, as being divine, as being binding. That applies ultimately to the written law, that applies to the oral law, that applies to biblical law, it applies to rabbinic law. Were a person to convert and say, I don't agree with this mitzvah, I don't think this mitzvah is true, I don't believe God said this, I don't believe that I'm bound by what the rabbi said. If a person were to convert with that approach, then it would appear to be that such a conversion would not be valid, because a person has not accepted the theological underpinnings of Judaism. But if a person accepts the theological underpinnings, even if behaviorally I don't necessarily know if I'm going to do everything, or we saw the case, Rav Moshe's case, where the woman who converted, she knew for sure she was going to violate, she was going to go into work on the last 2 days of Pesach, but she accepted the halacha. Just a lot of times, you know, God blessed us with this gift called cognitive dissonance, right? Where again, sometimes it's a gift, sometimes it's a curse, but we know certain things to be true, but we don't always act on them. So interesting, the way Rav Moshe Paskin is, as long as ideologically you accept the concepts, even if for some reason you're not going to be able to act on them because of extenuating circumstances, Rav Moshe said that the conversion is still valid. Which now brings us to this week's shiur. What I would like to focus on really for the entire shiur today, and again, I apologize, we're going to have to shorten it a little bit, so there are certain topics I wanted to cover that we're not going to get to cover. What I really like to focus on today is conversion with clear ulterior motives. Conversion when it's clear that someone is converting for another reason. And we'll see, of course, the most dramatic of these cases is often when? Marriage. So take a look at number one. The Gemara Maseches Yevamah says, Echad ish sheniskayir l'shum isha, whether a man converted for a woman, the echad isha sheniskayir l'shum ish. Or for that matter, a woman converted for a man, v'chei mish sheniskayir l'shem l'shum shulchan melachim l'shum avdei Shlomo. So the Gemara gives multiple examples of people who are converting for ulterior purposes and reasons. So a man falls in love with a woman falls in love with a man, or he's talking about in the days of Shlomo HaMelech, where the Jewish people were strong and were one of the dominant forces in the region, people would want to be Jewish. In all of these cases, Einon Gevrim Div Rabbi Nechemiah. Rabbi Nechemiah says it doesn't work. If a conversion for ulterior motives, it is clear that you're not converting to be with God, but you're converting to be with a man, you're converting to be with a woman, you're converting because the Jews have the upper hand, such a conversion is not good. Shai Rabbi Nechemiah used to say, Einon Gerin ad shi yiskayru bizmanazeh. You can't be a convert unless you convert bizmanazeh in this time. So Gemara says, what does that mean? Bizmanazeh sa'lat, what does that mean in this time? Ele'ima ki bizmanazeh. Rabbi Nechemiah used to say that you can only convert in a situation like this time. What is Rabbi Nechemiah referring to? Rabbi Nechemiah is living in a time of persecution, is living in a time of destruction. In other words, what Rabbi Nechemiah is saying is, you could convert, but your desires and your aspirations have to be clearly l'shem shamayim, clearly for the sake of heaven. How do you demonstrate clearly for the sake of heaven? There's no real gain in it. The Jews don't have the upper hand. Ultimately, there's no man in the picture, there's no woman in the picture. You're doing it simply to convert, which is just interesting. The Rambam actually brings down, the Gemara brings down, that we will not accept converts in the Messianic era. Right? The gates of conversion, the doors of conversion close when Mashiach comes. Why? Because when Mashiach comes, clearly the nations of the world are going to realize the supremacy of God. The nations of the world are going to put the Jewish people on a pedestal. And obviously people will want to be Jewish, because who doesn't want to be part of the winning team? So that's the Gemara says, again, when Mashiach comes, doors of conversion are closed. Rabbi Nechemiah therefore says, if there is any ulterior motive, if it is clear that a person is converting for any reason, whether it's love, whether it's relationship, or whether it's to be on the winning team, we don't accept such converts. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Marta Mishmei Derav, Halocha Kedivrei Omer Kulam Gerim. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta says, you know what? You're right. We shouldn't accept them, but if they converted, the conversions are good. Skip down to number three. The Gemara brings down another case. The Mishnah. Haniton ala shifcha v'nishtachrera o al ha'ovedes kochabev v'niskaira hare zelo yichnos. The Mishnah brings down another case. Let's say a man was involved in with a shifcha. Shifcha literally is a maidservant, a non-Jewish woman, or, now the difference of the shifcha, remember, is because a shifcha, a non-Jewish servant, in the biblical model of servitude, is partially Jewish, meaning upon emancipation, the slave or the slave woman ultimately becomes a full-fledged Jew. So let's say there are rumors about a man's involvement with this non-Jewish maidservant, or there are rumors about a man's involvement with a non-Jewish woman. And let's say, again, the maidservant is free, in which case she becomes Jewish, or the non-Jewish woman converts, hare ze lo yichnos. We do not allow the Jewish man to marry these women. Why don't we allow the Jewish man to marry these women? See, interestingly enough, if you look at Rashi says in number four, second line, lo yisa'ena mishum laz shelo yomru emes hayah kol harishon. Because if the Jewish man marries the woman, then what does that show? That the rumors were correct. That he really was involved with this woman. He really was involved with this maidservant. He really was involved with this non-Jewish woman. Because again, you can say, well, maybe she converted. She signed up for an account on Saw You at Sinai. They went ahead and they met like that. Shalom Yisrael. They found their bashert. Says the Gemara, looks a little bit fishy. If there are already rumors about their involvement prior to becoming Jewish, and now they go ahead and they connect after conversion, the Gemara says we don't want marriages like that. However, says the Gemara, v'im kines ein motzin miyado. But what happens if they got married? Then what says the Mishnah? We let them remain married. We will not force them to dissolve the union. So what's interesting about this is the following. So you see two thoughts in the Gemara over here. And if you look at number six, the Gemara just says this straight out. The Gemara says, ha giores miha havya. So what comes out from these two Gemaras, number one and number three, together with the Gemara's conclusion, number six, is like this. The Gemara says, if there's any trace of any type of ulterior motive, we do not want such conversions like that. Becoming Jewish is too big of a responsibility. Becoming Jewish is too much of a yoke that one has to bear in a positive sense to be doing it for someone else. Because, you know, again, if you're doing this for someone else, there's the possibility that what could happen? That someone else may leave your life, right? That someone else may simply cease to be a factor. May cease to be a factor in your existence. And as such, again, if you're undertaking this dramatic lifestyle change for someone else and they leave your life, you're stuck holding the ball, and that could obviously be very detrimental, very dangerous. On the other hand, even if you convert it, but however, if you did go through with the conversion, what's the halacha? The halacha is it's good. Man is involved with a woman who's not yet Jewish, and then she becomes Jewish. We don't want such marriages happening. Because again, remember, it's all part of the same equation. Because if we condone such marriages, then what happens? Then it initiates a whole cadre of converts who are going to convert for marriage, meaning it's all part of the same thing. So therefore, again, there were rumors about, you know, Reuven's involvement with this non-Jewish woman. She converts, don't marry her. Don't marry her, because we don't want to set up a conversion system that encourages people to convert for the wrong reasons. But if you married her, then what? We will not force you to go ahead and get divorced. By the way, just not our topic for today, but interestingly enough, there is another case where we do force people to get divorced. In the Mishnah number 3 says that if there are rumors about a man's involvement with a married woman, if there are rumors about involvement with a married woman, and then ultimately the woman gets divorced, we do not let the man marry that woman. Because again, that already borders on much more serious transgressions. There's an interesting discussion if they did get married. What's the halacha? We'll do that President's Weekend. All right, so now here comes the major problem. Obviously, in light of everything we learned last week, this poses for us a dramatic issue, which is, we spoke about last week that the major piece necessary for proper conversion is Kabbalas HaMitzvos, is acceptance of mitzvos. And even if we go with Rav Moshe's definition, Rav Chaim Ozer Gezhensky's definition, that it doesn't necessarily have to be that behaviorally I'm going to be able to do everything, but I have to at least intellectually, emotionally, spiritually commit to the concept of Torah. It would seem to be that the moment you introduce a man, a woman, a relationship into this equation, it should blur the lines and compromise the Kabbalas HaMitzvos. How can you say that a person has truly accepted the Torah, all of its tenets, written law, oral law, rabbinic law, biblical law, when there's a relationship involved? Shouldn't a relationship, by definition, cloud or blur the lines and compromise the effectiveness of this relationship? So take a look at number 7. The Ritva comes along and says something absolutely dramatic. And again, I put over here for you a little bit of a biography. You should appreciate, you know, often when we learn Torah, we don't always appreciate the people who we are quoting. We don't appreciate when they lived. It's very important, especially in halacha, to know when people lived, because knowing who came first is very important in establishing hierarchy and halachic positions. So it comes along the Ritva, Rav Yom Tov ben Avraham Ashvili, and he says the following. Listen to this line. One simple line, but one simple line that changes the entire trajectory of halacha. He says, so remember, the Ritva is addressing our basic question. And our basic question is, the Gemara tells me that if, let's say again, we'll call her Rachel, but the truth is she's not Jewish, so we can't call her Rachel. We'll call her Vashti. Okay. Things didn't end up well for Vashti. Okay. All right. We'll call her Miss X, right? So Miss X now wants to convert, but we find out that she has a relationship. She has a relationship with Reuven. Now, again, what the nature of that relationship is, we'll discuss a little bit later on and if that impacts anything. But we know that she has an involvement with Reuven. So we say to her, Miss X, I'm sorry, you can't convert while you have this relationship with Reuven, because we're concerned that it's going to cloud your judgment for what it is that you're doing. So let's say she says, okay, you know what? I understand. I'm not going to talk to Reuven anymore. She converts, and it turns out that what? The whole time she was maintaining a relationship with Reuven. The whole time. So what's that, Locha? What's that, Locha? Is your conversion good or not?
Yes.
The Gemara says yes. We're very disappointed. We're sorry you lied to us. We're sorry you deceived us. We're sorry that you did it this way. It's not the way we like to convert people. We like to convert people knowing that they're doing it purely for the sake of becoming a member of Klal Yisrael and no other motives, but at the end of the day, she's Jewish. Why? Says Ritva something amazing. Kevan dinisgairu v'kiblu aleihem. Because once a person, so again, remember our question is, why should that work? Her Kabbalah Samitzos, her acceptance of Mitzvot should be compromised. You can't tell me that she was Lishma. You can't tell me that she did it for pure motivations because Reuben's in the picture. So if you can't tell me that she did it for pure motivations, then why should the conversion be good? Says the Ritva. Kevan dinisgairu, because once Miss X, once she converted, they kiblu aleim and accepted upon herself mitzvos chazaka da'agav onsayu. There is a chazaka, there is a presumption that because agav onsayu literally means because of the circumstances, I apologize, I typed it wrong, that should be gamru v'kiblu. They have accepted, they have literally resolved and accepted upon themselves. The Ritva says something amazing. That the chazaka is that even if someone did something not for the best motivations, if they've accepted it, we assume that the acceptance is wholehearted. Or in other words, what the Ritva is saying is, you can have a full acceptance even with ulterior motives. It might be very true that the reason Mrs. X is converting is because of Reuven, especially when they announced their engagement, you know, a month later, right? So it's quite possible that it's clear to us that had Reuven not been in her life, maybe she would have never converted, right? But she did it now. So says the Ritva, so how do we trust that it's genuine? Because again, if we see Mrs. X, and at least Miss X right now, and she goes ahead and she presents as someone who's going to accept it, we assume that even if her motivation was because of Reuven, at the end of the day, if she took this step, she's going to undertake it wholeheartedly, and she's going to accept all of the responsibilities of Judaism with a complete heart. So the Ritva essentially is saying is, because once a person is already coming this far, the assumption is what? They're going to take full responsibility to do it correctly. Now, this is a major chiddush, a major, major insight and novel idea by the Ritva. So the Ritva, again, is accepting that although the motivation might not be holy, although the motivation might be for Reuven, at the end of the day, if Miss X is going to undertake this process, the halacha says there's a chazaka, there's a presumption that no one's going to undertake this without really living up to the responsibilities, and therefore we assume her Kabbalah was with a complete heart. So even though the motivations are flawed, the acceptance of Judaism and its tenets could be absolutely complete. And in fact, if you look at number 8, the Achiezer of Chaim Ozer Grzhensky quotes this concept. He says, V'hine lahalokha dekaimalon, dekulam geirim heim, mevor b'rishon b'ritva b'shem Rabban, the Tama Dabar, he quotes now the Ritva that we just quoted in number 7. The Chavan de Neskaru v'kiblu aleim chazaka the Agav on Sayu Gamri v'kabli. Ube Pshutam Nira, the Ava Pidu Umdina de Muchach, the Kavanos Lashenisha. So the Ritva, the Achiezer says, we know that Miss X converted because of Reuven. And we're not fooling ourselves. We now know that the real reason she did it was because of this relationship. Mikomakom. Mishum ones harotzon gamar umakni v'kiva lagers leisham. So listen to what Rav Chaim Ozer says. You know what? Miss X may have converted for Reuven, but you know what she also knows? She knows that if she's going to have a life with Reuven, what does she need to do?
Learn how to make matzo balls.
She needs to know how to make matzo balls and many other things, right? That ultimately she knows that if she's going to have a life with Reuven, she needs to become a full-fledged Jewess. And because she knows that this is necessary for her relationship with Reuven, she ultimately commits herself to all the tenets of Judaism. The Ika Umdina Shekibe Shegamar Umekabel Belev Shavim. Since Miss X knows that in order to have a life with Reuven, she has to become a full-fledged Jewess, therefore, even though her motivations might be a little bit flawed, we have no doubt about her willingness to carry through on her obligations. Adraba Hari Umdina Shakavanoso Valev Shalim Diminshum Unsayu Gamar Makaba Umihai Taima Ye Shlomar de Chol Delo Nisparu Lano Shainlo Ila Acheris Liskayer. Fine. So therefore, Rav Chaim Ozer Grzhensky literally paskins, like the Ritva, that Halacha L'Maaseh in this kind of case, although the motivations, again, I want to be clear, we would never, at least according to what we're saying now, actively convert someone under these circumstances. Meaning, again, if Miss X came to Beis Din and she said, the only reason I'm converting is to marry Reuven. I just want to marry Reuven, but I'm going to be a good Jewess. So no one is suggesting that we would proactively actually accept her like that. But if it turns out after the fact that it's clear that the motivations for her conversion was for this man, was for Reuven, says Ritva, says Chaim Ozer Grzesinski, the conversion is good. Why? Because she knows that to make this relationship work, she has to be a full-fledged Jewess, and therefore, again, we are confident that she will live up to the expectations and obligations. Comes along number 9, the Dvar Avram. The Dvar Avram was Rav Avram Shapira, who lived from 1870 to 1943. He was the last chief rabbi of Lithuania. The last chief rabbi of Lithuania, the Dvar Avram of Aram Shapiro, Hashem Yikom Damo, was murdered by the Lithuanians who were collaborating with the Nazis, Yimach Shemam B'Zichram, at the Ninth Fort. The Ninth Fort was an area right outside of the Lodz ghetto where many Jews were massacred. The Dvar Avram was one of those kiddushim. So the Dvar Avram in number 9 vehemently disagrees with Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski. And the Dvar Avram says, if you actually skip down a little bit, I should have marked it off on your sheet. If you look 2, 4, 6 lines up from the bottom. So the Dvar Avram says, Rav Chaim Ozer, let me get this right. What you're saying to me is, even though it's clear that Miss X, and now we'll call her Rachel, right, because she did convert, right? So now that she converted, you want to say it's good. Why? Because now that she wants to marry Reuven, she knows that she's going to have to be a full-fledged Jewess, and therefore she commits herself to really observing and upholding all the statutes of Judaism. So this is the Dvar Avram. Look again, 2, 4, 6 lines up from the bottom in number 9, right after the period, 4 words on the end of the line. V'zeh ha-yoshayach rak bizmanehem, says the Dvar Avram, Rav Chaim Ozer, you are basing your position on a Ritva. When the Ritva lived 1250, to 1320 in Saragossa, Spain. Says the Dvar Avram, you know what you are missing, Rav Chaim Ozer? In Spain, they had an organized community. And you know what happens in an organized community? If you don't toe the line, you know what happens? You know what happens? You get kicked out. And you know what happens if you get kicked out? You lose your family. You know what else you lose? You lose your friends. You know what else you lose? You lose your business. You lose your Yerusha. You lose your inheritance. There is incredible societal and communal pressure to do that which is right. Says the Dvar Avram. V'zeh ha-yashaych rak bizmaneim b'yomim mikedem d'achshri dori mashe'en kein achshav shegam isha zu v'gam chilek golo me'asviva ino noagim b'yandus v'gam achra gerus liya onus klal. Dvar Avram says, the Ritva's logic that even if she converted for the wrong reasons, she ultimately will commit herself to upholding Judaism is only when there's a communal pressure. When she lives in a community where there is a communal structure that if she knows that if she doesn't toe the line, she's going to be outside of the camp. But says the Dvar Avram, we don't have that anymore. We don't have that anymore. The Dvar Avram says, in fact, in our communities, most of the people are not observant. Most of the people are doing whatever they want anyway. And the truth is, nobody's being ostracized. Nobody's ultimately being told they can't do that. So says the Dvar Avram, the only reason why the Ritva's logic works is because there is communal pressure. But in the absence of communal pressure, and by the way, the absence of communal pressure essentially means the absence of community. You know, for us, this sounds foreign. You know, somebody once asked Rav Moshe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, is there ever going to be a thing called Minhag America? Right? Remember, if you look in halachic literature, communities had their own minhagim. Had their own minhagim, right? There's minaglita in Lithuania. They did certain things. Hungarian Jews have their things. There are different minhagim. So they asked Rav Moshe, will there ever be a minhag America? And Rav Moshe said, absolutely not. He says, you know why? Because in America, everybody does whatever the heck they please. Right? That's not a direct quote, right? But again, he says, in America, everybody does whatever they want. And the truth is, you know what the best example of this is? The best example I always say is tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Right? And you know, so what's supposed to happen is a kehila is supposed to have a minhag. A kehila is supposed to, but what happens in our kehila? It's so ridiculous. I mean, it really is. It just shows you the state of communal disrepair in which we live. So, right, I'm not wearing tefillin. The guy sitting next to me is wearing tefillin. The guy 3 rows back is not. What's going on over here? Right? I mean, there's no established. Okay, so some shuls will have, you know, the men with tefillin over here, the men with tefillin. But the point is, we have no established communal minhagim. And by the way, that's why you want to talk about the idea, you know, everybody's familiar with the Pew Report and the disastrous information that came from the Pew Report. That's part of the reason why, because we have no organized community. Because America, to its credit, this is one of the great things about this country, is a melting pot. And the truth is, again, kind of everybody gets to do what they want, how they want, which is wonderful in terms of our religious liberty, but is terribly catastrophic in terms of maintaining a sense of community. That's why even within the Orthodox community, we're ultimately, again, Baruch Hashem, we are experiencing growth on many, many ways. We have heightened levels of dysfunction in many areas because we can't come together to establish norms. We can't come together to establish basic protocol on a variety of different levels. So Dvar Avram, and this is interesting, so apparently we shouldn't feel so bad because I guess in pre-war Europe, things weren't that great either. So Dvar Avram says, no, Rav Chaim Ozer Ritva, I'm sorry. I understand your logic, but your logic only works in organized communities. But where there is no organized community, where there is no, therefore, communal pressure, societal pressure to toe the line, this logic will not work. And therefore, says the Dvar Avram, if it is clear that Miss X is converting, that she's involved with Reuven, we cannot accept that conversion under any circumstance. In number 10, I want to show you another polar opposite. So here's what you have. You have on one, so just to plot the graph so far. On one hand, you have the Ritva, Rav Chaim Ozer Grzhensky, on one side saying that although we don't like this kind of conversion, again, we don't like it, but at the end of the day, if Miss X converted, it's okay. Meaning the conversion is good because we're confident she's going to toe the line, do that which is right. On the other hand, Dvar Avram, absolutely not. We can't accept those kind of conversions because there is no way to guarantee what Miss X is going to do or not going to do. Now that we know that she didn't convert for the right reasons, the entire thing is suspect and there's no reason to assume that she's going to do that which is right post-conversion because we don't have organized community, there's no societal pressure. Comes on number 10, Rav Shlomo Kluger. Rav Shlomo Kluger lived 1783 to 1869 in Brody, in Galicia. So Rav Shlomo Kluger comes along and says something amazing. He says, take a look, Nira Otsad Lahakel. So Rav Shlomo Kluger says, I think there's another reason why this type of conversion could be good. He says, Dima de Osra le Kabbalah Chatila, Hainu Be'im Lo Ba'al Adayin Klau. De Oz Tokif Li Yitzra. As yesh chashash de'eno miskari l'shem shamayim, rak b'shvil ha'no'os isha. Aval be'bal, de'oz lo takev li'yitzra, as mutter l'kabim l'chatchila, u'mikol shekin be'bal harbe pamim, de'mutter l'kabim l'chatchila, v'hayo mizet sad heta b'nidon dindan. So Rav Shlomo Kluger says something very interesting. Shlomo Kluger says the truth is, and it's interesting, you know, people think, they think the world is the same, people are the same. Rav Shlomo Kluger says, 9 out of 10 of these cases, the couple's already living together. So he says, you know, when do you have to be concerned that a person is going ahead and converting for the sake of marriage? That's when what? When the forbidden fruit is still forbidden, right? When ultimately they're not living together. But if they already have a physical relationship, then the truth is they've already demonstrated that they're willing to go ahead and enjoy the benefits of marriage without going through the process of marriage and without even conversion. If that, so Shlomo Kluger makes an amazing argument. He says, if people are already living together, that's even a greater demonstration that the conversion is really for the right reasons. It sounds strange. Why? Because the conversion is not, again, just if a couple is involved with each other and they're not living together, again, Shlomo Kluger is not advocating for living together in these situations. I want to make that clear. But again, but Shlomo Kluger is saying like this, if the couple's not living together and the woman's not Jewish, the man is Jewish, and they're pushing for a conversion, then already I could hear that the conversion might be suspect because, again, they want to be able to consummate their relationship as man and wife. But says Shlomo Kluger, in most of these cases, the people are already living together. If they're already living together, they don't need the conversion to permit for them a conjugal relationship. That conjugal relationship is already happening. As such, why do they want the conversion?
Right?
They want the conversion because they want to build a Jewish home together. So Shlomo Kluger actually is positive, and it's an amazing reversal of the way you normally think. Shlomo Kluger says, since they're already enjoying the benefits of marriage without being married, says Shlomo Kluger, at the end of the day, it actually removes the suspicion from the conversion and would allow the conversion to be a little bit more l'shem shamayim. But he goes on, he says the following. He says, Umiyu, ain't tzarif lezeh. Shlomo Kluger now advances another bombshell. He says, Dibalav hachi yesh kan ochacha, Kevan didato kala vidato diim lo naftir lo yachzer ima lidato vikarov lihishtamid. Shlomo Kluber says something amazing. He says you have to tread very carefully in these situations. Why? Because often when you have, I'm keep on using the case of the Jewish man involved with the non-Jewish woman, but the truth is, it doesn't matter which way this goes. Shlomo Kluber says, you have to realize something. If you slam the door in their face, what's going to happen? He's not going to leave her. The truth is, if you ask most people to choose between their love and God, clinical tests have shown most people will choose love. Just the way human nature works. He has a connection to this woman. He has a bond with this woman. He's not going anywhere. This is Shlomo Kluber. If you close the door, you know what will probably end up happening? They'll probably gravitate to her belief. They'll probably gravitate to her family. They'll probably go ahead and just go in a different direction. So therefore, says Shlomo Kluber something amazing. He says, what's going to happen? Muchach didatam liskai l'shem shamayim. Shlomo Kluger says, so here's what's interesting. He's already involved with this non-Jewish girl. He's already involved with her, which tells you what? What does that tell you? Not necessarily too from. We don't want to make judgment calls, but what it says is that obviously, again, it's not like his connection to his Judaism is all that strong. Right? Again, let's call a spade a spade. So people who are firmly embedded in their religious beliefs don't get into these situations. If I'm in this situation already, it speaks about where I'm holding religiously, which means that a person like this is already living on the border, is already living on the line. So Shlomo Kluger, if you close the door, it's just as easy for him to go in another direction. And the truth is, again, the reason why it's also easier in that other direction is because it's quite possible that his significant other's faith will embrace them with open arms. So Shlomo Kluger says something amazing. So he says, if you already see that this person is already involved with this non-Jewish woman, and maybe they're already living together, which already indicates that his religious resolve is not all that great. But yet what? They still want to convert. So Shlomo Kluger says something amazing. He says, again, remember, it's not like they're holding out on intimacy until after conversion. So they're already living together. He's clearly not so rooted in his religious values to begin with, because how else would he get himself into this circumstance? So Shlomo Kluger, he says, all these things point in one direction, that she really wants to convert. For the right reasons. It's such an interesting logic. He says, because they don't need to convert to allow the conjugal relationship. It's already happening. They don't need to convert to go ahead and necessarily be from, because the truth is, he's already kind of doing whatever he wants without her being Jewish already. So Shlomo Kluger, there's only one reason why this woman wants to convert, and that's why. Because ultimately, they want to be Jewish together. They want to create a Jewish home together. Granted, it didn't start from the purest of origins, but at the end of the day, Shlomo Kluger, it's still called the Shem Shamayim. So, and if you take a look at number 11, Rabbi Bleich actually quotes this in one of the articles of tradition. He says some authorities grant considerable leeway in determining sincerity of purpose. Rav Shlomo Kluger discusses the propriety of sanctioning the conversion of a young man who threatened to become an apostate if his non-Jewish mistress would not be accepted as a proselyte. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Kluger rules that under such circumstances, the conversion cannot be considered as having been undertaken on account of marriage, since the couple will continue to live together as man and wife in any event. Hence, the conversion may be deemed to be for the sake of heaven and not for the sake of man. A similar view was voiced by Rabbi Lazar Deutsch and Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, the Sridei Ish. So here again, so now you see how like all of this. And this is the difficulty. You know, somebody asked me after last week's shiur, when we were speaking about Kabbalah and mitzvos, what constitutes acceptance of mitzvos? Somebody asked me, so like, how do we paskin? So how do we rule? So what's the accepted approach? And the answer is yes, right? The answer is yes. Now, again, as I said to you, my whole purpose of showing you all this is just to show you why the controversy exists. You know, unfortunately, much of this controversy comes out of our beautiful state of Israel. And people assume that whatever comes out of Israel is always politicized. The difficulty of the modern state of Israel is the intertwining between religion and politics. And there are certainly political considerations, but it's important to know it's not all politics. There's a lot of halachic controversy. And the halachic controversy is not based on this one being more strict. The halachic controversy comes out of the original sources. So here you have a hot topic, a contemporary hot topic issue of conversion for the sake of marriage. And you've seen all the different opinions. You have on one hand the Ritva, Rav Chaim Ozer Grzhensky, as saying we don't like this type of conversion, but if you did it, it works. And why? Because we assume that if a person undertook this process, they will fulfill their halachic obligations wholeheartedly. You have on the other end of the spectrum, the Rav of Lithuania, saying, no, it's not good. It's not good if a person converted for the sake of marriage. They are not Jewish under any circumstances. Don't tell me they're going to accept everything wholeheartedly. It's not true. They're going to do whatever they want because there's no societal pressure. There's nothing to force them to live up to their obligations. They're just going to simply live however they want, doing whatever they want, and no one could force them to do otherwise. You have Rav Shlomo Kluger, who says, I think it's actually a gerus l'shem shamayim. I think that even though the motivation ultimately is because they want to be married, but it's not like conversion is standing in their way of doing anything. They're living together as husband and wife. This couple could just as easily go in a different direction. So Shlomo Kluger says, I think you could proactively accept this woman as a gioras, and we'll call it l'shem shamayim. Yes?
These cases beg the question of what happens if it doesn't work out between Reuven and Rachel.
So good.
And
so
then,
that
Rachel decides to go back to her family and her own ways.
It's an excellent question. And this, unfortunately, the truth is, you should know, this comes up in conversion cases in general, because it's not, there are many cases, and there are many, you know, popular halachically documented cases of people who convert and then actively resume a previous lifestyle. For our approach today, we're going to have, and it's a complicated question, for our approach today, we're going to have to assume that when it comes to conversion, you only look at the moment of conversion itself. You can't be a prophet. And the truth is, if you start retroactively annulling certain conversions, which was a major debacle that happened in Eretz Yisrael not so long ago, right? You undermine the entire system of conversion. So conventional wisdom normally says, you know, there's a halachic concept that says, Ein ledayun lodun elamashe in obroos. A judge could only adjudicate a case based on what his eyes see in front of him in the present. And so when a person converts, we look at you in the here and now. What you're going to do afterwards, that's between you and God. But it would appear that what you're going to do afterwards would not undermine the effectiveness of the conversion right now. There'll be others who will disagree with that. But right now, we're going to operate with that approach. The same way, by the way, going back to what Rav Moshe said last week, remember again, Rav Moshe said, remember that woman who went to work on the 7th and 8th day of Pesach, and she knew she was going to do that. What did Rav Moshe say? We don't care what you were thinking. What we care is what you said. And when you're in front of the base and you accept the mitzvos, that's what we look at. Take a look at number 12. I want to show you an amazing Gemara. And this will introduce to us another piece of this discussion. The Gemara says, Tanya Amar Rabbi Nasan, Ein lecha mitzvah kala sheksuva betorah, she'ein matan schara ba'olam hazeh, ul'olam haba, ini odia kama, tzilum am mitzvah sita. So the Gemara says, you know, we don't fully appreciate the power of mitzvahs. Every single mitzvah has so much meaning, has so much power, carries so much reward, both in this world as well as the next. And the Gemara says, I'll give you a simple example of the mitzvah of tzitzis. Listen to this. Ma'aseh ba'adam echad shayazari mitzvah tzitzis. Listen to this, very interesting. There was a story, there was once a man who was very careful with the mitzvah of tzitzis. Shama shiyesh zona b'krachi ayam. So what's interesting is, he was very careful with the mitzvah of tzitzis, but he was a very immoral individual. What was his hobby? What was his pastime? He used to visit prostitutes. That was, nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect, right? I just want to point out something very interesting, by the way. Just as an aside, it's very important to understand that, you know, you think to yourself, what a fool. You're worried about mitzvahs, and you're worried about tzitzis, and you're going to prostitutes. You know, again, obviously, the immorality is a major issue he's going to have to deal with. But the point is, people often feel that if they can't be perfect, then what's the point of trying? It's not true. The Ribono Shel Olam is always willing to accept us for where we are holding. And therefore, again, if this guy, he was able to do tzitzis, but he wasn't able to rein in his desires, does that negate the effectiveness of his mitzvah of tzitzis? Does the Kodesh Baruch Hu say, you hypocrite? You see, we often think that we're hypocritical. If I do A, but I can't do B, there's no hypocrisy in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I'm genuine to do what I can do, but I can't do the rest, the Ribono Shel Olam accepts that as well. So listen to this story. This is amazing, Maisa. So this man was wearing his tzitzis, and he hears about a particular zone, a particular harlot overseas that took an exorbitant amount of money for her fees. Dalit Meos Zehuvim, 400 gold pieces. So what does he do? Shigir La Arba Meos Zehuvim, the Kavala's man. So he sent her the fee. And he made an appointment with her. When the time ultimately for this rendezvous of immorality occurred, he came to our house. He traveled. He came to our house. Nichnesa, shivchasa va'amrala, Osa adam sheshiger lech dalid meos zuhuvin ba v'yashav ala pesach. So what happens? So she had like a secretary, this zona, this harlot had a secretary. She was a busy lady. So what happens? So the secretary tells her, you know, your customer is here. This man had traveled from overseas. He's here. Amrahi yikanes. So she says to her secretary, send him in. Nichnas. Hetzilo zayin mitos she sheish shal kesef va'achas shal zav. Ubein kol achas va'achas sulam shal kesef v'alyona shal zav. Also the yashva agabi alyona kishia ruma. So amazing. So what happens? She prepared multiple beds that had sheets of finest linen, right? Covers of gold and silver. Again, she made the room look beautiful for what would be this act of immorality. And she had multiple beds, and she sat on top of the upper bed waiting for him without clothing. Va'afhu ala leishef arum kenegdan. He also scaled the beds to come next to her. Listen to this. The moment that he's about to engage in the act of immorality, Ba dalit tzitziyosav v'tachfo lo apanav. So a breeze must have come in, and his tzitzis slapped him in the face. Nishmat it's a moving gemara. Nishmat v'yashav agabe karka. He got down from the bed, he sat down on the floor, and he began to cry. Va'af hi nishmata v'yashav agabe karka. So this zona has never had this happen before, right? This man was sitting right next to her, ready to engage in the act of immorality. Suddenly he gets off the bed. He says, so what's going on? Amrla, gapa shalomi, she'ini manichascha at she'tomer li ma mum ra'isavi. This is amazing. The harlot, the prostitute, she's offended. She said, tell me, I'm not going to let you out of here until you tell me What was wrong with me? What deficiency, what blemish did you see in me that suddenly your desire went away? Amrlas, listen to what he says to her. Ha'avoda, shalore'isi isha yafa kamoscha. He says to her, I've never seen a woman as beautiful as you. Elo, so what happened? Mitzvah achas tzivanu Hashem Elokeinu b'tzitzis shma. He tells her, God commanded me one mitzvah, and that was tzitzis. And it says by this mitzvah, I am Hashem your God twice. Ani hu she'asah li para, v'ani hu she'asah l'shalim schar, v'achshav nidmu alai kedalet edim. And he says, you know, it says, I am Hashem your God twice in this mitzvah. And what God is saying is, I am the witness who will bear witness with you for this world and in the next world. And he says, when I got slapped in the face with my tzitzis, I was reminded that anything I do in this world will follow me into the world to come. The tzitzis slapped him out of his immoral stupor and made him realize, I can't do this. This woman is amazed. Amar lo, listen to what she says. Eimi manichecha, at shetomer li mashmecha, mashem irecha, mashem rabcha, o mashem midrashecha sha'ata lamad batorah. So listen to this. So she says, I'm not letting you out of here until you tell me your name, the name of your city where you come from, your Rebbe's name, your rabbi's name, right? Don't give that out too freely, right? Your rabbi's name, right? And the yeshiva where you learn, right? Now, again, remember, I would have to imagine that in these type of encounters, the most important thing is anonymity. So what she's now asking him for is, I want to know who you are. I want to know who you are. Give me all of your information. So for some reason, kasav v'nasan biyado. For some reason, he wrote it all down, and he gave it to her. Listen to how the story ends. Amda v'chilka kol. This woman was so moved by what she saw. She was so moved by the piety of this simple man. And remember, this man was not a tzaddik by any stretch of the imagination. We already know what he's doing recreationally. Now you see, he's not one of these hidden tzaddikim. It's not like Hasidic Shemaisa. He turned out to be one of the lamed of tzaddikim. No. He's not a tzaddik by any stretch of the imagination. But she was so moved how even someone who is so immoral and potentially so depraved was so moved by one mitzvah. So what does she do? She retires. She was very successful and very wealthy. So what does she do? She sells off all of her possessions and she divided up her wealth. Shlish l'malchus, she gave a third of it to the Roman government. She was a good Roman citizen. Shlish l'aniyim, one third to the poor. Ushlish not labiyada, and one third she kept for herself. Chutz me'osan matzos. You know the one thing that she did not sell were the sheets that were on the bed that she sat together with this man. Those sheets she did not sell. Those sheets she kept. Listen to this. She tracks him down. Ubasa lebeis midrashal sharabichia. She came, so this man learned in the base. Can you imagine when he runs into her at the kosher Dunkin' Donuts? Right? I'm just saying. So what happens? See, he was learning in the base measures from Rabbi Chia. She, this former harlot, this former zona, shows up in the base measures from Rabbi Chia. Amra lo shis Rabbi Chia, Rebbe, tziva alai via asuni giores. She says, Rebbe, convert me. I want to convert. She was so moved by this encounter with this simple Jew. Convert me. Amrullah, sister, again, a little bit strange. BT. Shema einayich nasata be'echa mina talmidim. My daughter, why are you here? Why are you here? Do you perhaps have something going on with one of my talmidim? Right? Meaning, he was asking for this woman who must have enjoyed quite a reputation to suddenly show up in the Beis Medrash. Rabbi Chia says, I want to convert. My daughter, is there something going on? So what does she do? Listen to this. Hotziya ksav miyada. Vinasmila. Oh. What does she do? She takes that. She says, as a matter of fact, yes. And here's his information. She takes out a piece of paper and she gives to Rabbi Chia. Listen to this. Amrala, lechi zechi b'mikhech. It's in a moving Gemara. He says, he converts her. And he says, literally, zechi b'mikhech means go and acquire acquisition. Listen to how beautiful this is. Osan matzaos sheitzielo beiser, hitzielo beheter. Those sheets that you are going to use for an act of immorality, use them for you and for your husband for an act of beautiful intimacy. Ze matan schalo ba'olam hazeh. I know how much reward you will have in this world. Oli olam haba in yodeh kamam. I can't even imagine how much reward is waiting for you in the world to come. An amazing, amazing Gemara comes along, tells us in number 3:13 and says, okay, after the euphoria of the story wears off, we have a major halachic problem. What's the major halachic problem?
Ulterior
motives should be ulterior motives. Meaning, right, again, remember, she's not even coming along and saying, you know, I had a wonderful time at my local Chabad rabbi's Shabbos table, right? And it was wonderful, and I turned on to this. She comes in, Rebbe, I met this guy. And this guy's piety was overwhelming to me. And I was moved by his sincerity. And I was moved. You know what she was really moved by? She was moved by the power of one mitzvah. She was moved by the power of a simple mitzvah of tzitzis. And if this is just one mitzvah in the beautiful Torah, this woman says, I can only imagine what the rest of it is. And he converts her. Says Tosis, what's going on over here? So Tosis actually references a case we had last week. And Tosis says, Vahahi de perek beis de shabbos, hahu de asa lekamei de hilal, va'amar geirayni amanas la'asos koin gadol. So Tosos points out the previous case of Hillel, where the guy came along and said, convert me on the condition I become the Kohen Gadol. And Hillel converted him. Why did Hillel convert him? Because Hillel was convinced of his appropriate intentions. Hillel was convinced that he was really Shem Shemayim. He just had this shtick. Says Tosos, v'chein ha'hi dat, he quotes from the Gemara, da'asila kamei de Rebbe, Gairani amanas she'enasi la'osa talmid. So too, says Tosfos, this is the same dynamic here. Rabbi Chia understood that as much as her motivations were to marry this talmid, this particular talmid, her intentions were pure and were l'shem shamayim. So again, even though the motivation was really for this talmid, the motivation did not compromise the authenticity of her Kabbalah, of her acceptance. Says the Beis Yosef, number 14. What do we learn from this episode? Last line. Umikan, what do we learn from this? Yeshlomod dahakol lefi ra'os ene beisdin. So the Beis Yosef says, we see from this a very important concept. That when it comes to the laws of conversion, the court that is administering the conversion kind of has to use its own common sense. There are people whose motivation for conversion is some external motive. But yet what? Their commitment to the process and their commitment to be full-fledged pious Jews is no less authentic than someone who is coming without any ulterior motives. And essentially what the Beis Yosef is introducing us to, which is really based on Tosos, which is based on this Gemara number 12, that there's a part of the conversion process that is not written in Shulchan Aruch. There's a part of the conversion process that essentially is an intangible. There's a part of the conversion process that we have to leave up to the judges who are sitting up, sitting as part of the Beis Din, because sometimes the only way to truly assess a person's intentions is how? When you sit across the table from them, when you get to know them, when you understand their story, where you understand where they're coming from and what they're heading to. That is the only way to fully assess the authenticity of their motivations. And therefore, says the Beis Yosef, this line becomes very important. Yesh lomod dehakol lefi ra'os einei Beis Din. Every part, the major parts of conversion, have to be left up to the decision-making powers of the Beis Din. Now you also understand, if this concept is to be true, now you also understand that who holds the keys to conversion is very, very important. Because ultimately, again, what the halacha now is vesting, the rabbinic body that oversees conversion with, and remember again, conversion could technically be administered by three rabbis, right? By three individuals. So again, and there are, we have to put this out there, there are people in the conversion world today who don't know what they're doing. There are people who have very good hearts, but very limited intellect, who have wonderful intentions, but really are amaratzim, are really ignorant in the laws of Geirus, and they're playing with fire because they convert people, and they convert people wholesale, and they convert people in a way of saying, we're more sensitive than everybody else. You know, the best way to delegitimize someone is to say that they're not sensitive to the needs of others. There are many movements that have sprung up within Orthodoxy that really pride themselves on being more sensitive than everybody else. And besides the fact that it's very hurtful to others who try to be very sensitive but yet operate within the confines of halacha, it's not true. People often use sensitivity to mask ignorance. And one has to be very, very careful, because here the halacha is just made a humongous step in a different direction. We have now gone from establishing objective halachic criteria to now saying, yes, with all of the criteria, the halacha allows the Beis Din the room for halachic maneuverability. Beis Din, you have to make the call. The same way that Rabbi Chiya has this harlot shop in his Beis Medrash, and she says straight out, I want to marry this guy. Rabbi Chiya assessed the situation and said, I know, I understand that she is lishma. I understand that she is authentic, and he converts her, even though it's clear, that becomes the halachic paradigm. Just for the sake of time, skip to number 18. The Rambam, now remember, the Rambam has shalos and tshuvos. The Rambam has an amazing tshuva over here. The Rambam has this case. The Rambam says, here's the case. Man gets involved with a non-Jewish woman. In this case over here, he's actually involved with one of the servants. Now, it's interesting. You know, much of the Rambam's work, the Rambam was very active under the Almohads, right? Under Muslim rule. And interestingly enough, much of the Rambam's works were edited throughout time. So it's interesting, you know, this was a non-Jewish maidservant. So there are different opinions. Some say, you know, in one version of the Rambam, she's Christian, and another version of the Rambam, she's Muslim. Right? What does that depend on? It depends on who's editing the texts, right? Because the Islamic censors do not want the text reading that an Islamic woman converts. The Christian censors don't want a Christian woman converting. So everybody's switching it to the other religion. So it really, for our purposes, it actually doesn't make any kind of difference. At the end of the day, she's not Jewish. And this young Jewish man gets involved with her. So they come to the Rambam and they ask him, so now what happens? There are rumors about his involvement with her because she's part of the domestic staff. She's living in the house. So they come to the Rambam. What should we do? There are two options. What are the two options? Either number one, force them to remove her from the home. Force the family to fire her and send her away. Second possibility is, if they're interested in each other, should we encourage her to convert? Comes along. So look at 18 bays. Says the Rambam, what should they do? Yishachrena v'yisa'ena li'isha. So then, what should we do? Have the family emancipate her, free her, she shouldn't be a maidservant. convert her and let this Jewish boy marry her. Afa pishiyish bazek ke'ina veira. Lefi shanitan ala shivcha v'nishtachra asu l'san l'chatkila. Haram says, I know what you're thinking. We had this. This was an explicit Mishnah. What did the Mishnah say? That if there are rumors about a Jewish man's involvement with a Jewish maidservant, a non-Jewish maidservant, and then she converts, what don't we want? We don't want him marrying her. So I know that I'm just going to quote me the Mishnah. Lefi shekvar pasaknu pamim achados kegon ve'elu mekarim. Yishtel, he says, va'asinu zos mitnei takhanas ha-shabim. Va'amarnu mutav sheyochal rotav ve'lo shuman atzmo. Eis la'asos la'ashamei faru sorasefa. U'misayin lo lisa'ena ba'adinos. U'baruch v'ikva'enu lo'moy lisa'ena lo'atziyak mosha asa ezra. So listen to this. The Rambam says something amazing. Rambam said, listen, here's the deal. He's involved with this girl. We don't know he's involved with this girl. So you have a choice. And what's going to happen? We can lay down the law. We could say you have to fire her. What's going to happen when you fire her? What's going to happen? He's going to go live with her somewhere else. Let's go live with her. So it says the Rambam, essentially, we have to choose between the lesser of two evils. And we have to, what are the two evils? Either allow him to continue on with a non-Jewish girl, or ultimately convert her. Convert her. Now again, obviously, this only works if she's willing to accept Torah and mitzvos. But assuming that she is, says the Rambam, convert her. And the Rambam acknowledges, I'm choosing the lesser of two evils. His lashon is, better to eat the rotav, better to eat the gravy, and not the shuman itself. What does that mean? Shuman refers to forbidden fats. So in halacha, it's less of a transgression to eat the gravy in which the fat is sitting than the fat itself. Because the fat itself is prohibited. The gravy only has the tam, the flavor. Better to eat the gravy than the fat. So what is the Rambam introducing us to? The Rambam is introducing us to an idea that what? That l'maisa, we can even create bidi ebed conversions if it's the lesser of two evils. And look how the Rambam ends. He says, v'ha'elokim, look how he ends, because the Rambam has very broad shoulders. V'ha'elokim yis'ale yitakin kilkulo and kilkulenu. Kimo sheftiach. So the Rambam says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us fix all that is broken. So where does the Rambam get this from? The Rambam is taking the concept as espoused in Tosfos, not in the Beis Yosef, the Rambam comes before the Beis Yosef, where the halacha says, Hakol lefi ra'os einei beisdin. That the halacha vests the beisdin, the halacha vests the judge with a certain amount of latitude to do that which is right. The Rambam says, I'm using the latitude. In this type of situation, it is better to convert her, even though, again, it is far from a picture-perfect conversion. But if my choice is between this Jewish man carrying on with a non-Jewish woman versus converting her, even not under the most optimal circumstances, I would rather convert her under b'di'evet circumstances and at least know that he's going to establish a home with a Jewish woman. If you take a look at number 19, Rav Henkin has a similar concept. He says something very interesting. Bishas Hashoah, Lakach Yehudi Isha Nochris Berusya, Uba Ima Limedinazu, Becheskas Yehudim, Vesnago Ki Yehudim Bekashrus, Bishabis Kirago Bimedinazu, Kamasu Adem Yeshivos, Vabanem Ein Yodim Tiv, Imam Tiv Imam, She Nochris Shlonis Kaira, Ataba Isha Rabba Sadilo Kidushin in Mishto, Vinichonel Iskayer, Kidas Moshe Yisrael, Kikach Hoyadaita Mirosh, Ashla Osa Akomim Beabusha. Listen to this case. A man marries a woman. This apparently was really, he says, B'shas HaShoah, whether it's during the Holocaust, after the Holocaust, a man married a non-Jewish woman. And what happens? They lived the Jewish life. They kept Shabbos, they kept Kashrus, they raised their Jewish, their children Jewish. Of course, the greatest testament is they paid day school tuition, right? They did this all of their lives. The kids don't have a clue that their mother's not Jewish, which means they're not Jewish either. And now she wants to convert. Right? What's the problem? The problem is you want to speak about conversion for the sake of marriage. Right? She's in the middle of a marriage. She's built a whole life with this guy. It's clear again that the reason she wants to convert is because she wants her marriage to be on regular footing. So what should we do? He says, Hine heter hagero shel isha af shehu biglal bal kavar nispashet api dire harambam b'tshuvas musham mutav. So how did Rav Henkin paskin? Rav Henkin said we can absolutely convert her. Why can we convert her? He bases it on the tshuva of the Rambam. What the Rambam introduces us is this idea that sometimes when conversion is the best option, even if it's not optimal, we choose it and we go with it. So this woman, again, we don't know. We know that ultimately she's keeping Shabbos, she's keeping Kashrus, she's sending her kids to day school. Does she believe in it? Does she actively believe in it or not? Behaviorally, it certainly is indicative that way. This case is even a little bit easier because here she's embedded in this. She's committed to this lifestyle already. But says Rav Henkin again, it's not an optimal conversion. But the Rambam already told us that what? Hakol lefi ro'os einei ha-beizdin. The basin has the right to make the call for what's most appropriate. The Rambam says again, I think it was appropriate to convert that maidservant. Said this boy can marry a Jewish girl. So this says Rav Henkin, we're going to convert this woman as well. Take a look at number 20. With this, we're going to have to conclude for today. Even though there's a lot more to speak about over here. I'm quoting to you from a tshuva of Reb Ben Sion Meir Chai Uziel. So the Mishpate Uziel was, you could see his whole biography is on the next page. He was appointed in 1939. He became the Rishon Litzion. He became the chief rabbi of Israel. And he served in many previous rabbinic posts as well. The Mishpate Uziel has some groundbreaking tshuvas, some groundbreaking response in the world of conversion. So look what he says over here. And again, we're going to just have to do this quickly because of time, but I just want to end off with this. So the Mishnah Uziel says like this. He says, Gioras Shiniseis Liyisrael B'Giyusa. See, he's now dealing with a different case. What's his case? He's dealing with the following circumstance of a non-Jewish woman who's married to a Jew. Now remember, in the original case of the Rambam, you're dealing with a Jewish man who is involved with a non-Jewish woman, but they're not married. And the Rambam paskind that essentially it's better to eat the gravy than it is to eat the forbidden fat, and therefore convert her. The Mishnah is dealing with a different situation. Look at 20 Aleph. Biyosi mishareis bekodesh b'Salonika. When I was Rav in Salonika, mishalti b'ish miyisol shenasa lo isha nachris. And the following case came before me. A Jewish man was married to a non-Jewish woman. V'sho'ima kama shalim. They were married for a number of years. V'nald v'yolda lo banim. They had children together. The ata ba ha'isha lihisgayer lunase bechupa v'kiddushin kidas Moshe v'yisrael labaylo zeshen asol isha b'giusa. So now what happens? Now the woman comes forward and the woman wants to convert. You should know again, these situations come up all of the time, and I will tell you in 9 out of 10 cases, it's not the Jewish husband who cares, right? The Jewish husband is, meaning the Jewish husband married her when she was not Jewish. So the Jewish husband is very happy to continue as is. It is virtually always the non-Jewish spouse who for some reason has some kind of awakening. Right? She's approaching. The Mishpat Uziel, she wants to convert. She wants to convert, and obviously with her conversion also comes her children's conversion. She wants to get married with chuppah and kiddushin, and she wants to be a Jewess. So the Azen Yishalti. So the Mishpat Uziel says the following question came up. Aleph, im rashu'im bezin lehizakik lo l'gayra. Kevan Shadas Nota Lomar Shishazu Inimus Karatashum Gerus Elikade Lihinos Elikudas Moshe Yisrael. So question number one is, why is she converting? So the Pashtus, it's for marriage. It's for marriage, right? Again, at the end of the day, she's already in this relationship. She already has children, so it's marriage. Although again, interesting enough, we saw already, based on what Shlomo Kluger said before, it actually would not be true. It's not for marriage. Why isn't it for marriage? They're already married. They've already got a family, meaning clearly things are working out okay, even without the conversion. But yet, what the Mishnah Uziel is saying is, the reason she wants to convert is because she's married to a Jewish man, and she wants to be fully married to him in accordance with his laws as well. Now, the first question is, the conversion itself is suspect. Not suspect. The conversion itself is clearly being done for the sake of marriage. Base. Furthermore, again, if we convert her, can they really stay married? Because after all, the halacha is what? The halacha is that if a man was rumored to have involvement with a non-Jew, then what? When she converts, we don't want to marry her. All the more this case over here, where it's a lot more than a rumor. It's not a rumor anymore. It's clear. Maybe even if we convert her, we shouldn't let them stay married. Gimel. Vim tinsol shemutul lekansel lechatila shemet sarich v'os poshimenu shlosha chadash chotshe havchana kodim shisen. This is a second issue, which we're not going to get into today. There's a concept that after a woman converts, we tell her you can't get married for 3 months after you convert. Why? Because in the event that she is pregnant, We want to know about pregnancy prior to conversion versus pregnancy post-conversion. So maybe, again, even if we do convert to this woman, perhaps should we make them separate for 3 months after the conversion to be able to see, is she a convert? Is the child that she's pregnant with from before conversion or after conversion? So these are the three questions that Rishtei Uziel is dealing with. Look what he writes over here. He says, Beis, Bidin Kabbalas Hager, Pasak Maranzal, Kishayav, so he quotes over the Shulchan Aruch, and then he also quotes the Rambam, and look what he says at the end of paragraph Beis, just for time, I'm skipping a little bit, but you can look at this more on your own. Umikan Yesh Lomot, Da Kolifi Ra'os Inei Beis. So the first concept he quotes is the concept as espoused by Tosfos in Menachos, Tosfos in Shabbos, also the Rambam in his Tshuva, that Beis Din always has latitude to decide the authenticity or the appropriateness of conversion. Look at paragraph Gimel. Don mine. So learn after this. Don mine b'ni don didan. Shegoya zu nisua kavar li Yisrael. So let's be honest over here. This woman, this non-Jewish woman, is already married to a Jewish man. Ubahachnosa me'ata bebris hayados tiskariv yoser v'yoser el mishpachas baila v'soroso. So what's going to happen? She's now, again, remember, the conversion itself is not necessary for her marriage because she's already married. But what will happen as a result of her conversion? Once she becomes Jewish, you know what's going to happen? Her husband's family, that may have kept her at a distance until now, is now going to be accepting and draw her closer. And what's going to happen? Va'od zos shebaneh hanoladim la ve'elo sheyuldu lo me'ata yiyu yehudim gimurim. And what else will we do? We're going to convert the children that she already has. And any children that she would have going forward would also go out and be Jewish. Hari zed doma la'osa maisa de'hilel ve'rabichia. The Mishnah Yisrael says, I think this case is no different than the case of Hillel. What was the case of Hillel? So that was the case of the guy who wanted to convert to be the Kohen Gadol, or all those crazy cases, or the case of Rabbi Chiya, which was the harlot that showed up and wanted to convert. Because in both of those cases, Shebatuach Shesofam Yihiyu Geirin Gimurim. The common denominator in both those cases, both Rabbi Chiya and Hillel, understood that as much as they were compromising circumstances, they were confident that at the end of the day, the person would be a full-fledged Jew. He says, "V'rashoim oyoser nachon mitzvah aleim lekarvam." Says Mishnah Yisrael, in these cases, it is a mitzvah to bring them closer. Ulahachnisam bevris Torah Yisrael ulahotzi nega taruvos. We have to get rid of this problem of mixed marriages. Shunega, and he's not talking about Sfardim and Ashkenazim. Shuhunaga memeir bekerem beis Yisrael. So the Mishnah Yoziel says something amazing. The Mishnah Yoziel says, he says, I think we can convert her. Why can we convert her? Number one, because, see, right now, what's the issue? The issue is that her motivations for conversion are not pure. They're not altruistic. She's in a marriage already, which clearly indicates that part of her motivation is for her husband, for the family. But says the Mishnah Yoziel, what's going to happen if we convert her? You know what's going to happen? Her husband's family is going to draw her closer. Now, this, by the way, gets into a whole separate discussion about conversion in the Sephardic community. Conversion in the Sephardic community is a totally different animal. Many segments of the Sephardic community have a ban on conversions. They do not accept converts. And in many segments of the Sephardic community, if you marry a convert, that is no different than marrying a full-fledged non-Jew. They will not accept you. So again, what's interesting to note is this is happening within the Sephardic community, in the community of Salonika, which must have had different levels of acceptance for conversions. In any event, the Mishnah Yoziel says something dramatically groundbreaking. The Mishnah Yoziel says, we can convert her. But why? If she's clearly doing it for the sake of marriage, does that not compromise her Kabbalah Samitzos? Mishnah Yoziel says, you know what? Now that we have this concept of Hakol Lefi Ra'os Inei Beis Din, everything is according to the vision of the Beis Din. Beis Din has the right to say, when we look at this woman, you know what we see? We see potential. What's going to happen? She's going to convert. Her husband's family is going to draw her near. So what's going to happen when her husband's family is going to draw her near? What's going to happen? She's going to light candles with her mother-in-law. And when she begins to light candles with the mother-in-law, that means they're going to start doing Shabbos a little bit better. And she's going to grow in her observance. And she's going to become part of the familial unit. And the children who she now that they now have already will be converted as well. And any future children will go ahead and be Jewish as well. What the Mishnah Yoziel is saying is that sometimes we have to use conversion to stem the tide of intermarriage. We have to use the tool of conversion to prevent an erosion of the Jewish family. Now again, you have to be careful because this could very easily be misapplied as well. This only works where or when. This only works when the convert has a real desire to accept. Obviously, if somebody is just converting for the sake of being a Jewish spouse so that, you know, the husband's parents won't get angry, that's not what the Mishnah Yoziel is talking about over here. There has to be a level of genuine acceptance. There has to be a genuine level of Kabbalah HaMitzvos. If that is there, even if circumstances are not necessarily optimal, says the Mishnah Yoziel, you can go ahead and convert. But here's the problem with this. The problem with this is it's difficult to establish a baseline. It's difficult to establish an objective framework. Why is it difficult to establish an objective framework? Because again, this is all operating based on what concept? Hakol lefi ra'os enei ha-beisdin. This is all operating based on how the beisdin perceives the situation. Once you're dealing with perceptions, perceptions vary beisdin to beisdin. Perceptions, more importantly, vary person to person. But the Mishnah Yoziel is introducing us to this groundbreaking concept, which is that what? Which is that lemaisa, again, hakol lefi ra'os enei ha-beisdin is further. It's not just about the ger. Hakol lefi ra'os enei ha-beisdin means we have to have an eye to societal issues as well. And if we are having an intermarriage problem, and now you have an intermarried couple, and the non-Jewish spouse is expressing an interest, grab the opportunity for this. Grab the opportunity to Jewify, that's all right, to Jewify a mixed marriage. Go ahead and grab the opportunity to purify a familial line and create a family of Jews instead of an intermarried couple. So again, we'll stop over here, but if we bring this all together, what comes out from this entire conversation is quite traumatic. So we see, although on one hand the Gemara says you cannot convert for the sake of marriage, you can't convert it, it's a compromised conversion, but at the end of the day, if you did it, it works. Why does it work? You have the Ritva, the Achi Ezer, Ruchaim Ozer Grzhensky on one hand saying, because again, once a person accepts it, they're going to carry through. Dvar Avram says that's ridiculous. They're not going to carry through. They only carry through with societal pressure. There's no societal or communal pressure anymore. Rav Shlomo Kluger, who wants to say, no, the truth is, again, they're already living together, which more often than not are the circumstances in these type of situations. They don't need to convert in order to be able to have a physical relationship. So once that's already off the table, then they're clearly converting L'Shem Shamayim. We already saw Tosas introduces us to this idea based on the episode with the harlot. Although she's a Gioras now, we shouldn't call her that. Whatever she is. This Eishes Chayil with the past. Right? So now again, we start from the start of this Eishes Chayil with the past is that what? Hakol lefi ra'os enei ha-beisdin. That Beisdin has the latitude to make certain conversion determinations based on the circumstances in front of us. How far do we actually take that? How far? So again, we saw the Rambam who takes it so far to say that, you know what? With that Jewish boy who was involved with that non-Jewish girl, he's going to keep being involved with her. So he might as well convert her. Because at least converting her means that he's married to a Jewish woman, as much as it's not an optimal conversion. Mishpatei Uziel, again, Rav Henkin said, the family post-Holocaust, same thing. It's not great. It's not the way we like to do conversions, but it's the best option we have in front of us. The Mishpatei Uziel says, let's globalize this. We have an intermarriage issue. We have an intermarriage issue. Therefore, says the Mishnah Yoziel, if you have an intermarried couple already, if you have an intermarried couple already, and the non-Jewish spouse wants to become Jewish, again, assuming that they really want to become Jewish, they want to practice Judaism, says the Mishnah Yoziel, grab it. Aye, but right now, again, she's not on the level. Right now, she's not holding. It's okay, because you know what's going to happen? You're going to convert her. The Jewish family is going to bring her even closer. We'll have a greater impact. The children will be Jewish. And all of these circumstances come together to create a more whole Jewish familial unit. Hakol lefi ra'os enei ha-beisdin. If Beisdin sees that converting this woman could serve not just the familial good, but the societal good, then do it. And now you understand why there is such controversy in the realm. Now, we're not finished by any stretch of the imagination. There's a lot more to discuss. Rav Gorin, Rav Cook, Ruthie Guggenheim was nice enough to share with me some additional information, which is amazing. So Rav Gorin, Rav Cook, there are many things, but at least for now you understand why there is such incredible controversy. There are many today that want to pick up the banner of the Mishpatei Uziel. Many today that want to pick up the banner of and say that, you know, we have an intermarriage problem. And therefore what we need to do is what? We need to relax the standards. Relax the standards, because understand if you relax the standards and let more people get their foot in the door, over time, they will grow. he'll be accepted into the community. Others say that is a slippery slope. To open it, remember, the Mishnah Yoziel was doing this on a one-case basis. To open up the doors wholesale runs the risk of undermining the very identity and familial fabric of Klal Yisrael. Who's right? It's an incredible tension. It's an incredible tension. And that's why, again, in most of these situations, it's hard to say what we should do as a community. It's hard to say what we should do as a nation. But rather, again, the principle itself says, Hakol lefi ra'os einei ha-bezin. In reality, each of these situations must really be looked at on its own merit, and every in person must be looked at as to where they're holding. But at least, again, when you hear about these issues as they come up, and they come up every day within the ranks of Klal Yisrael, so at least to understand it's not cut and dry, it's not black and white. It's nice to say, let's be lenient and let everybody in, but being lenient and letting everybody in comes with a very heavy price tag. And unless we have a way to control the collateral damage, it's hard to advocate for that approach on a wholesale level. On the other hand, being too restrictive, being too chamor, being too strict with the standards also intensifies the already existing problems of mixed families. The goal ultimately we have to find is try to find, like most things in life, as Rambam writes, derech hamamutza, the middle ground, to try to find some type of compromise position that on one hand would maintain the familial integrity, but at the same time open the doors for those who deserve to really have a place within our nation. We'll stop over here. If you give Mrs. Kalma your attention just for 2 moments, she's going to tell you about a very important program.
Thank you. I've been a member of Suburban Orthodox congregation since 1978. But I want to tell you for a few minutes about an organization that I've been a part of for the last year.